This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Shope went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I think a random picture zoomed in and there was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unusual, the unsatisfied, the unincorporated.
Johnny and Billy here, and we like to talk about, well, some would say strange topics like cryptozoology, ghosts, near death, conspiracies. What else do we talk about?
Oh, all kinds of things, you know, creatures and things that go bump in the night, and witches, and goblins, and ghosts. We talk about it all.
Well, our guest today goes bump in the daytime, I think, right? Mary Joyce?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us again here on Strange Harbor.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
I receive this kind of newsletter from you periodically, and you have all sorts of cool updates and whatnot in that newsletter. You talk about Bigfoot, you talk about Mars, you talk about all sorts of stuff. I'm the Bigfoot guy. He's the near-death guy. Mom's the Mars gal, but she's not here right now. What do you have on Bigfoot? Let's start at Bigfoot.
Well, I just got back from a trip to South Dakota, a place I've never been before. And we saw all the tourist sites, but we made a special effort to go to the reservations, particularly the one called Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. It's probably about an hour outside of Rapid City. And it's probably the most destitute, or one of the most destitute reservations in the country. But, much to my surprise, I got some Bigfoot stories, some little people stories, and some UFO stories when I was out there.
Wow.
And we just posted two Bigfoot stories. And if you go to our website, which is skyshipsovercashers.com, on the right-hand side, we have the latest postings. And these two that I got when I was at the Sioux Reservation are at the very top. So it's easy if somebody wants to go and read the whole story. The first one is an audio, and I was having a conversation with a man named Frank Nightpipe, and he was raised on a different reservation, but still in South Dakota, called the Rosebud Reservation. And he told me, his stories about UFOs, and he mentioned that there were little people. But then he took me over to his computer and pulled up a YouTube video of a Bigfoot recording that was done on the Rosebud Reservation. So if people want to hear that, we have a click that you can, press on, and you can hear it for yourself. The other Bigfoot story is a little bit more involved, and there's a young woman, I think she said she was 29. She was raised on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And she told the story of when she was about 14, 15 years old. She and her aunt and her aunt's husband or her uncle went out hunting. And they were she said, somewhere between 10 and 20 miles from any of the roads. And they came to a gully, and they drove into it, or down into it, and they smelled something that really smelled badly. And anybody who's been into Bigfoot knows that oftentimes there's a very bad smell that, you know, goes with them. And they also saw a deer. Well, they were there to hunt, so they stopped their truck and were getting ready to hunt, and something started throwing rocks at them from up on the upper edge of the gully. Obviously, it turned out to be a Bigfoot, and that deer that they saw was obviously a deer that the Bigfoot was hunting, and he was not happy that these humans in a truck had arrived. It's kind of interesting, on the side, she said that the truck was brand new, and yet it stopped running. They couldn't get it to run. So they're in the truck, very, very worried, because this creature at the top of the gully keeps throwing rocks at them. And they went, let's see, I think it was the uncle got out, and he managed to go up the gully where he could get cell phone reception, because he couldn't get it where they were down in the gully. And then he came running back, got in the truck, told his wife and this girl, her name is Marty, to, you know, get down and hide, because not only did the Bigfoot start throwing more rocks, it came up to the truck and rocked it and hollered and beat on it. And the uncle finally shot off a gun, and it made the Bigfoot back away, but he did not stop throwing rocks. And they were stuck there, I think it was until like 4 or 5 in the morning before they could get help and get out of there.
Wow.
So it was kind of a terrorizing event for those people. Now, not all stories are what I would call scary stories with Bigfoot. Some of them are very nice, but that's one of the ones that would kind of get your blood pumping really fast. And I should also add that the Sioux, let's see if I can remember the names they use for the Bigfoot. They call him Big Brother, and they call him the Watcher. And they say it's been a long tradition that at nighttime, the Bigfoot watches over the land, watches over the animals. So I found the description that comes down through their tradition kind of different than this experience that this woman had. So, you know, you're left with, again, realizing there must be different aspects of the Bigfoot.
Wow. And little people, you know, we've heard a little bit about the little people. Can you explain more about that?
When I first moved to Western North Carolina, that was the first time I'd ever heard of Cherokee Little People. Now, I'm in North Carolina, not in Sioux, not in Sioux country. I began to hear all these stories about these little people, the Cherokee Little People, and I kind of dismissed it, you know, as just old legends and old fanciful stories. And one day, a very well-respected elderly man came in that I had met before to the place where I was working, and he said, no, they're real. When he was a young man after World War II, he was involved with the excavation for new buildings on Western Carolina University, which is maybe 20 minutes away from where I live. And everywhere they cut into what they thought was virgin land, they would find these little tunnels. And the tunnels were always cut into this dense red clay. They were square cut except for the top, and the top was always arched, which, as I understand it, make something structurally stronger. And they also found little bones. There was a science teacher who kept a skull on his desk that he said was from a Indian mound, and he said it was a child's skull. And one day, I think it was an English teacher from high school, was in his office. She picked up the skull and looked at it, and she said, this is not a child's skull. It has all of its wisdom teeth. When I began to hear these different stories, you know, I began to say, okay, there might be truth to this. And this one elderly man introduced me to other elderly men who had been involved in various aspects of construction at the university after World War II. So I began to spend my Saturdays interviewing these guys over coffee in kitchen tables. Eventually, I realized that all these stories they had, all these experiences they had never been recorded anywhere. And so I didn't really set out to write a book, but I wanted to, retain this information because I thought it was unique and should be preserved. And at first I just did it in an academic, boring fashion. And then I did a book. It's called Cherokee Little People Were Real. It has lots of photos. It has the interviews I did with the people. It has location maps. So that was my introduction to little people. And then I found out that there are various kinds of little people around the world, including on the Sioux Indian Reservation. If you want to hear that story, I can give you that one, too, since
yeah,
it's still
let's hear that.
This woman that I mentioned, her name is Marty, and when she was a teenager or young, she and some others took their grandmother out to a creek or a river where she liked to fish. So they set her up in a chair with her fishing pole by the river, and then Marty and the other young people or children or whatever went down further in the river so they wouldn't disturb the grandmother. They heard splashing, and they saw something dive into the water, you know, disappear into the water, and they had no idea what it could be, so they went swimming back up to where their grandmother was. Then the grandmother was, her fishing line started to break, and she had caught a catfish, so she's directing the kids to go and catch the fish before it got away. So they went and caught it, and they were bringing it back to their grandmother, and when they walked up the embankment of the river, they found these teeny tiny little footprints that she said were 2 to 3 inches in length. That's part one of the story. Part two of the story is sometime not too long after that, her brother-in-law and some of his buddies were about a mile or two further down the river than the first episode, and they discovered a little cave, you know, in the bank. And they went into it, and they found miniature-sized bows and arrows and what I would call a quiver and drums. And they took at least some of these things they found and took it back to show it to their grandfather, who immediately told them, you better take those back, you know. And they did. And they claimed that after that, for 2 days, they were essentially harassed by the little people. And the little people supposedly killed some of their pigs and chickens. And I guess it was a very strong message, don't mess with us.
Wow.
So those are two stories that I've just come back with, or three stories, I guess.
So is there any speculation as to where these little people come from or who they are?
Obviously, I've come a long way from when I first was doubting that they exist, and I've done a lot of research since then. There are little people known all over the world. They have different names. I used to know the name that they have for the Hawaiian little people. But the little people that I'm talking about are not like little fairies or elves or anything like that. They typically are 3 to 3.5 feet tall, and that seems to be pretty common. So who's to know? The Cherokee here believe that the Cherokee, originated from the Pleiades, the star constellation. The little people do, too. So maybe we all originate from the stars.
That's interesting.
And it sounds like they're as common as, like, Sasquatch are in most Native American culture also. The little people are...
They seem to be in the cultures I'm aware of, in the Native American cultures. The Bigfoot seems to be more commonly spoken of, I suspect, because unlike the little people, they can hide more. They can't hide as easily.
Yeah. Are the Native American tribes that you've encountered, do they interact with them, or are they brought up to avoid them?
Now I'm just speaking about my home turf of North Carolina. I do not think that we have the aggressive stories here like you have in your part of the world.
Mm.
We have a lot more stories where people have had okay encounters or pleasant encounters. I'll give you a contrast to what we've been talking about. A number of years ago, a man who was with the military, who had to retire early because he had cancer, and so he was not an old man, but he came to the mountains from, I don't know where he was from originally, it may have been Florida, and he bought a cabin in one of the national forests around here, and his cabin was located about 30 feet above a creek, and then behind his place, the mountain went almost vertical, and there were no roads, no development, anything on that area behind his house. His first encounter was when he heard and then saw a Bigfoot pounding or doing what they call wood knocking. So if you're into Bigfoot, that's a very common term. They will communicate for whatever reason by taking a large limb and banging it against a tree. And so he heard that and saw it. And then his next encounter was he was at his house and he heard flashing in the creek, which I said was like 30 feet from his house or below his house. There were no children anywhere near where he lived. In fact, he lived on an old gravel logging road, so there he was pretty isolated. So to hear what he thought were children splashing in the water, he thought was, you know, very odd. And when he went to check it out, he then heard some, what he described, I think, his growls or, you know, low guttural sounds. That was his second encounter. I think the third one was he was sitting on his porch. It was at night. He had like a, he called it a street light, but he had a light by his garage. And so you could see the gravel road between his house and the creek. And he saw a family of four, mother, father, and two, what he called adolescents, cross the road. And over time, he saw this many times. This particular man, probably because of his cancer, became quite a health nut, and he was raising his own food as much as possible without using chemicals and things of that nature. Eventually, when he would garden, the male Bigfoot would come, and they got to the point where they would telepathically communicate with each other, and the man would share food from his garden with the Bigfoot. He also, when he had leftover food, he had a spot by the creek that he would take his good but leftovers to down by the river so that the Bigfoot could have it. So he had a very comfortable relationship with him, so much so that he would not let us use his real name, not because he didn't want to be known, but he didn't want to put his Bigfoot friends in jeopardy, you know, fearing that hunters might try to find them.
Wow,
so
yeah.
That's a gentle story. You compare that to the one where the hunters are terrified. So you got to realize not everything's the same.
We've heard accounts where there's telepathy or mind speak involved.
They definitely have the ability to telepathically communicate. I think it's a skill that, or an ability that humans probably have too, but we've ignored it for so long, it's probably on low pilot light.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I agree with that.
That seems to be a preferred way of communicating. Though they certainly do get vocal. And there's one thing we have posted that I think everybody ought to listen to on our website. It was posted earlier this year, so you can still find it under the Bigfoot postings. And the title is Archaic Japanese in Bigfoot Language. And it truly sounds like a samurai warrior speaking. It's quite incredible.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was recorded more in your neck of the woods in the Sierra Nevada mountains in California by Bigfoot researcher by the name of Ron Moorhead. But what made the whole thing more interesting is that Scott Nelson, who's a linguistic cryptologist, or was, with the U.S. Navy for over 30 years, he analyzed this. And apparently the Bigfoot speak rather rapidly, so to hear some of it, you have to slow down the speed. And he gives some real background and understanding to the verbal language of the Bigfoot. And it seems from his research that the Bigfoot will incorporate human words into their vocabulary. What we experience here in this part of the country, on this side of the Mississippi, is quite different than, you know, what people find in your half of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ours live a little bit closer to human beings, and they've had to learn to be quieter. They've had to learn to be more secretive. In the process of it, many of them have become more approachable than what we often hear about your side of the country.
That's interesting, because out here, they're beginning to log off thousands and thousands of acres. You know, I assume that besides the deer and the other animals that live in those woods, that there probably is at least one or two Sasquatch families that live out there.
Oh, without a doubt.
That means they're pushing them more towards civilization, more towards human beings. I wonder what that will do to not only to the Sasquatch population, but to people that begin to see them.
And you just never know how that's going to turn out. I mean, some of the Bigfoot, you know, become very territorial. And if you think about it from a human perspective, if everybody was cutting down your neighborhood, it would probably piss you off.
Yeah.
So you can really understand the more aggressive behavior that, you know, we sometimes, you know, hear about. I don't know. It's really quite sad.
Do you think our government's aware of them, know about them, have studied them, and, you know, are just ignoring that they're there?
In my opinion, this applies to many different subjects. There are those within the government that know just about everything. They usually deny it. They usually act like they don't know. They're very aware of UFOs. And people don't realize that human beings, our military, have flying vehicles that look like UFOs. And so many of the things that we see flying in the night sky that are unusual may very well be man-made. And the government knows about it. And the government knows that oftentimes the UFOs are in the same area as the Bigfoot, which is certainly true here.
Any reports of Bigfoots entering or exiting a UFO in your neck of the woods?
I've heard stories and read stories like that. I'm not personally aware of one of those that's happened here. I can tell you that in the same area where we've had an abundance of UFO sightings, it's the same area where we see Bigfoot. I have never seen one for myself. I've interviewed a lot of people who saw them, and I can tell by the way the witnesses are talking and speaking that they are very, very sincere about what they've seen. You know, I don't know what to tell you. We've done experiments that kind of prove the Sasquatch are real, kind of indirectly. We tried to play the role of Jane Goodall and did some food experiments, and we wanted to find out what kind of food, first of all, if the Bigfoot would take the food, and secondly, we started the experimenting to see what kind of foods they preferred. One of the times we took stuff out in a cooler that you would take a six-pack in and had different foods in it, and we had the lid just slightly tipped so you could tell what was in it without opening it. And when we went back, everything had been taken out of the cooler, but the lid had been put back on. So that eliminates, we weren't in an area where other people would have done it. And that would eliminate bears and any other wild creature because they would never put the lid back on.
Right.
And another lady who had, many places around here you have to take your trash to the dump, and she had her bag of garbage set out on her porch, and she was going to take it to the dump the next morning. And when she got out there, the bag had been untied, and obviously certain things had been taken out of it. And again, a bear or other or a dog or any other creature would have torn the bag open. They wouldn't have untied it to get into it. So there's little hints like that that begin to support the fact that they're different and real.
Well, we're talking with author and researcher Mary Joyce. Coming up, we'll talk some more on UFOs and Mars, the big Mars thing.
Mars. I like Mars.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, Ghosts, UFOs, Alien Sasquatch, All Things Strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor, be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we have Mary Joyce, author, researcher, living in North Carolina, as our guest today. So you're talking about how in your area there's a lot of UFO sightings, there's a lot of Sasquatch sightings. We've heard stories about them kind of intermingling, whether the Sasquatch is boarding a UFO or exiting a UFO. Do you personally think there's a relation there, or what are your thoughts?
There's some kind of connection. I have not been able to get enough evidence to declare that it's this or that, but the fact that they keep appearing in the same area you do have to keep your mind open to why that's happening and who's behind it. If our human beings are on those UFOs, that would be a whole different scenario than if they're UFOs coming from out in space. And at this point, I don't know how to tell the difference regarding that.
Yeah.
And I do want to say one more thing. If people go to the website, we've really done a lot of Bigfoot stories over the years. Before we went on the air, I counted them. We've done 55 Bigfoot stories since 2010, something like that.
Wow.
And there's a section on the homepage on the left-hand side. It has categories, and one of those categories is ETs and Bigfoot. And if you go in there, in the archives for this year, 17th, 2016, 2014, 15, 2013, all the way back to 2010, we have Bigfoot stories, and some of them are quite interesting. So if people want to spend some time doing their own research, that's a way you can entertain yourself on a rainy day.
How about alien abductions? Do you come across many of those?
I have never come across one here.
Okay.
I find that very strange because you certainly hear about it all the time. I have never gotten one of those.
And that could just be one of those things to where they're too afraid to talk about it even, right?
It could be that. It could be that certain areas are more prone to having those kind of things happen. Many of the abductions that I do learn about in other parts of the country, they're often, some of the people, let me back up. There's one lady who was in the military at one point, and she was abducted, but when she partially came through, or came to, there were military, U.S. military people there along with aliens. So it just opens up a can of worms. You go, what is going on and why are they doing these things?
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten several reports along those. I can't at this moment tell you exactly the title that, would get you right to it. Because
right.
55 stories just on Bigfoot, it's
yeah.
Hold on to it all.
How do you validate your reports?
Whenever I can, I like to meet the people.
Yeah.
Whenever I can, I like to see the evidence for myself. This will continue to be one of our most dramatic stories, and I will give your listeners a clue on this one. If you just type in Valley of the Bigfoot in the search bar, you should be able to get to it. And this was a very, very involved story, and we have it written, and we also have a video where somebody is really doing a very good job of explaining at least part of what happened, and that is still listed on, I think you can get it right on the homepage right now. It's simply called Video Interview About Bigfoot Encounter, and it hasn't been up there all that long, and we've already had, I think, about 25,000 hits on it.
Wow.
And so if people, the woman that's talking speaks very well, and so it's a good way to get it. But the article itself that started it all, again, is you can find it by typing in Valley of the Bigfoot. And this, it actually took months and months for this woman to get enough courage to talk to me about it. She had confessed it to her hairdresser. Hairdresser told me, and then I convinced the hairdresser to try to get this person to talk to me, and it literally took months before she would do it. And this woman lived in a valley where it was just a creek flowing into it and a single lane road going into it, so it was sort of like a little box canyon. And there were two houses, a barn, and a pond. And when we arrived there, and other people from the website went with me, the woman was still very, very afraid, to the point where she had moved out of where she lived. And whenever she returned to the property, she had her bodyguard with her. And basically what had happened was they were trying to repair the dam that was creating this pond on the property. And somebody was out there with a jackhammer, and they busted into, a cave, and all the water went from the pond down into this hole. We later figured out, nobody could figure this out at first, that had flooded a cave where the Bigfoot were living, and it pissed them off.
Oh.
And they were, this is one of those stories, again, if you mess with them, they don't like it. And they had, and I'm talking a number of Bigfoot, had been all over the place. And I have pictures in that story that show the fingerprints and the, I mean, these Bigfoot just got in the house and just tore it up. They wrote on the walls. They were messing around in the bathroom. They had squeezed out the toothpaste. It's like they were trying to figure out everything in the bathroom. And we are all very, very grateful they didn't know what the toilet was for.
Yeah.
So we had to deal with that. But the story's quite elaborate. And eventually we went out there with a woman who has spiritual type ability where she can tune into things.
Mm-hmm.
And we just wanted to see if she would have any luck in finding out what was going on. She went out by the empty pond by herself, and when she came back, she explained what had happened because she was telepathically getting this information. And eventually, the Bigfoot backed off on what they were doing, and they actually left a makeshift little basket that was looked like it was made out of a scrap of burlap, and it had little shiny things in it, and they left it in front of the front door. I think it was like an apology type gift. The destruction pretty much stopped after that.
That is fascinating.
Very interesting.
Now, I don't know if you know this about me or not, but part of my career, I was in the newspaper business. And so I bring that kind of detached perspective when I do these stories, which
yeah.
you're supposed to do when you're doing newspaper work. And but things happen sometimes, and I don't know if I've ever actually confessed to this on a radio show before. But when we brought the psychic woman to this Valley of the Bigfoot, I saw something and she saw something. And it was quite bizarre. There was a dog. I was driving. It was to my left when we came up to park the car. It looked very much to me like a pharaoh's dog or hound. If you've ever seen those in ancient Egyptian art, it looked like that, kind of very big. It jumped or ran in front of us, went a little bit to the hill to the right of us, and just vanished right before our eyes. So I cannot give you any logical explanation for that, except two of us did see it at the same time. It looked like a dog,
yeah.
but it didn't look like any dog I've seen around here. And I spent actually hours searching the internet trying to find a dog that looked like this dog. And the closest I could come was the old Pharaoh's hound.
A lot of weird things going on in North Carolina.
I never thought that when I moved here, that there would be so many unique things here. But it's there's a lot of beauty here, but there's also a lot of many things to capture your curiosity, for sure.
You got anything, Bill?
I want to hear about Mars.
Oh, Mars, yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on with Mars, Mary?
We've been doing postings of that since 2011, 2012. We don't have as many postings. We only have 16 that we've done on Mars, but we try to do things that are very unique. And we actually have, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, 4. We have 5 different postings where we give people the coordinates. So you can actually copy and paste those coordinates on Google Earth and find these things for yourself. You know, there's so much Photoshop madness going on in our world today that I think people find it very reassuring when they can go and find things for themselves. We found entrances that way, and they're big. I mean, there's one that they estimated to be 3,700 feet high and 528 feet wide.
Wow.
That's huge. And we have pictures of these entrances from the Google, Earth satellite imagery. And these do not look like ancient things. So much on that's posted is ancient stuff. but these are very square cut things that look like a major airplane could fly into it. And they're square cut and they look fresh. So we have links to some of those. There's also evidence, in my opinion, that we human beings are already on that planet. We have imagery or photos of, what do they call them? They're like self-contained capsule-type structures so people could live on the planet. And what's interesting is we found conceptual artist renderings of possible space units that people could live on, you know, where it's just supposedly speculative. Well, then we find at least two or three images that look very much like what this artist is drawing, where he is supposedly drawing things for the future. And again, we have the coordinates so people can go and find it for themselves. We found train tracks, and there seems to be a cart on one of them. And the train tracks go into one, I think it's a crater, and then it comes out the other, goes into another one, and then there are, I think it was two rectangular-shaped, what I'll call buildings, there. So this train track goes right to where these buildings are hidden in a crater. And I would encourage people, if they're bored sometime, to do some of their own Google searching on Google Earth for themselves. My biggest success was I found something that looked like Mars had a rash. And so I kept zeroing in on it. And when I zeroed in on it, what looked like just speckles of a rash were actually metallic-looking structures, and a lot of them. And that was just me playing around with Google Earth, and I stumbled on that one. Wow. If people want to check it out, it's in the archives for Global Links for 2016. And it's simply called Stumps on Mars Look Metallic. And that's one I was thrilled to find all by myself, because usually I have to take hints from somebody else who's already been doing some of this research.
You know, there's been a lot of criticism with the face of Mars and the pyramids of Mars. Do you think those are legit or a play on shadows?
I have two reactions. Number one, I'm inclined to believe that that is evidence of an old civilization on Mars. I do think some of the people go too far and they see shadows and things, and I think put too much imagination into it and see things that I certainly would have a hard time imagining. So people go too far with it. But yeah, I think Richard Hoagland was onto something when he found that, and he certainly got the ball rolling when it comes to this topic.
Do you think that there was a civilization on Mars then, yeah?
Oh, yes, I do. I do.
You think maybe that's where we came from?
There's some convincing arguments that would make any thinking person consider that possibility.
I like that. Any thinking person. Nice. What do you think is like the number one argument that we did? Because I'm not familiar with any of those arguments. Or could you point me in the right direction to where I could look it up?
Oh, off the top of my head, I can't. I mean, as far as something real specific.
Yeah.
Just looking at some of these things, like the ruins, we have an article. It's titled "Looks Like a Cluster of Hexagon Ruins on Mars," and they look very. First of all, a hexagon structure is not going to be caused by meteorites or something like that hitting the surface of Mars. A hexagon is a very unique shape, and when you see a cluster of them, there's an indication of community type existence. In that particular article, I show a picture of the ruins on Mars that are hexagonal, and then I show ruins in Africa that aren't hexagonal. They're more oval, irregular oval shapes, but they're clustered together in the same way. That's not a very convincing argument, but that is something to put into the pile of information that makes you wonder, yes, could they really have been there? I mean, we have stories where somebody, you know, can remember a past life supposedly on Mars. To the real, hard to convince person, that's not going to do it for them. But there are stories and situations like that. The particular story I'm thinking about was originally It came from a young Russian boy, and he was very young at the time. He already knew all about the galaxies, and he knew the names of the different things. He had knowledge that no little boy should have. And he's the same one that had past life memories of flying from Mars to Earth.
So are there any specifics that he gives about flying from Mars to Earth?
Well, he talks about very advanced flying or vehicles. He talks about war going on, and he was a fighter, I believe, or a jet flyer. When he flew to Earth, I think it was during the time of the culture in the Pacific, going blank. Mew is the only one that's coming to mind, but it's not the best name for it. But there was supposedly a culture that sank into the Pacific ancient times on Earth, and he remembered going to Earth at that time. But the fact that he was born and knowing incredible information about the star systems, you know, just has to make you wonder. If I remember correctly, his mother actually went to the library and was doing research about things he would tell her, and she would find out that he indeed was talking about real things. So if he was right about all those things, that type of thing, then perhaps we have to consider his past life memory as a real possibility, too.
You know, I wonder if we're just on this cycle of war and we destroy ourselves and then, you know, we're placed somewhere else to try again, and then we, you know, do this war thing and we destroy ourselves and then we...
It does seem that we have a tendency to be much too violent.
I find it fascinating. I've talked to lots of people who have kind of past life memories, and so this rings true with me when we talk about past life memories. So, you know, it fascinates me because I think there is a part of the brain that stores these past life memories that we just don't access. But I think as children, you kind of have access to more of those areas of the brain than you do as an adult. So,
there's no doubt about that. When I worked for Texas Instruments out in West Texas, I became friends with one of the gals who worked there, and she had a little girl, maybe she was 3 at the time, and I don't know what triggered it. I was at her house, and her little girl was there, and something we said triggered the little girl to talk about that she used to have another mommy, or when her mommy was, you know, a different mommy and looked different.
Yeah.
And the part that I remember most vividly, because this is going back a bunch of years, was that she talked about there was a great flood, and she said things that were kind of odd for a 3-year-old. She said, and all the snakes came out. Well, we know when the flooding happens, the snakes try to get out of the flooded waters. So that struck me as interesting. And then she was on the floor, and she had her kind of with her legs almost folded back to the side, which only little kids can do easily.
Yeah.
And after telling much more than what I'm telling you, she threw her head back, and she had long hair, and it flopped back, and she stayed still for a moment, and she said, and then I died. Now, that's just very bizarre for a little 3-year-old. You know, to talk about a flood, to talk about her mommy looking different, you know, it's just, it was just very striking because, I mean, she wasn't even incredibly verbal at that point. So.
And it's obviously not something that they were exposed to.
Oh, no, because she never would have seen anything even close to that on TV.
Yeah.
She's pretty well, you know, watched over by her parents. So that's one story. I have a couple of my own, since you're interested in this kind of thing. Back in the days when I didn't believe in this kind of stuff, I lived on Cocoa Beach, and I had interviewed a man for an article that I was writing, and he was also a hypnotherapist, and he had somehow said something about doing it with me, and I said, well, if you can get me under, okay. Well, I was with a bunch of friends, and he was there, and I said, okay, everybody go out to the beach. If he gets me under, he can call you back, you know, in the house. And I didn't think he could do it. Well, he did. And I started recalling a Chinese life in, like, Tibet very vividly. And I asked for a piece of paper, and I wrote some stuff down on it. And when I came to, it was Chinese. And I'm going, hmm. And we actually took it to the Chinese restaurant to see if somebody could explain it to us. And they took it back to an older man that was working in the back, and he said, this is a form of ancient Chinese. So you do have to... You do have to consider that past life memories can be very real.
Whoa.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story.
This has just been fabulous. We appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, very much so.
We covered a lot of subjects, didn't we?
Yeah, I just zipped through it, too. It just flew by. How do I find your website?
Okay, the website is called skyshipsovercashiers.com. Cashiers is pronounced cashiers, but it looks just like a cashier at a store. So skyshipsovercashiers.com. And I've written three books. If you want to find out about them, you can go to Open Up Editor's Corner and scroll way down to the bottom. And the three books are Cherokee Little People Were Real, which I mentioned earlier. Another one is Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. And the third one is a totally different topic. And it's called Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find. And it's the scientific archaeological finds that give a whole nother dimension to Jesus.
Wow.
And all of those are available through Amazon. And I should also let your listeners know that the website is not just words. We have photos and imagery with everything we write. I try to keep it condensed so it's easy to write. Sometimes I get carried away, but I try not to do that. There are archives in every single section of the website, and most people will find things that will be new to them even though it's in the archives. And there's some good stuff in the archives, like the story about the Valley of the Bigfoot, I think, is back from 2013, I think, but it still remains one of those stories that's memorable.
That was Mary Joyce from North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Tar Heel.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going out there in North Carolina. They got a lot of wooded areas out there. It's been a while since I've been out there.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you would like to listen to this episode once again, listen to back episodes, read some interesting articles, yell at Bill for his New Age TUI, log on to strangeharbor.net. We'll see you next Sunday, 4 p.m., right here on KBKW.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.